Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming out to the Comic Book Club. Now please put your hands together for Alex, Justin, and Pete.
One, two,
what's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's where I'm at of the booth, All-Star Booth Man.
Yeah!
All-Star Booth Man.
What a star.
Hey, now, he's an all-star.
Cool.
Get his game on.
Never gets old.
Hey,
yeah,
no? Stop Shrek? It. Have you guys
no.
seen Shrek?
I think most people would say no to that.
Yeah.
They just reject that.
Cool. Guys, this is a packed show. I'm really excited about this. We have two awesome guests tonight.
Great
we'll mention
guests.
Who they are in a second. Let's
nice.
Keep it real
way
mysterious.
To tease. That's building tension.
But it's such a packed show. Normally, later in the show, we have a section called Week in Geek, and we'll get to that.
Yeah.
We talk about TV and movies and other things in the world of geek.
You know, it's hard to fit in all the topics, though.
It is, though. Pete, before the show, was saying, in particular, he wanted to talk about two shows, Supergirl and Lucifer.
Yep. And we rejected those shows because they're not they're barely real.
Yeah.
They're barely real television programs.
What do you mean, barely real?
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Supergirl was amazing.
Yeah, no, Supergirl, I like. Lucifer, you may be the only one watching.
Anybody Lucifer? Nope.
Okay. Oh, just someone heckling.
Just out
heckling.
Of curiosity, with
I
Lucifer,
love that show.
Did you make some sort of deal for like your soul to
nope.
watch it?
Yeah. Nope.
He granted you.
I just watched it and really enjoyed it.
Huh.
Yeah.
What's good about it? Sell us on the show. You're pitching the show. We're high power TV execs, usual. pitch us on the show.
And just to mention, I got to go get a green juice, so
ooh,
I don't have
good.
A lot of time.
Very hip Hollywood reference.
Yep. Right.
I have to valet my car. Great.
All right. So
I have to go to sleep at the Hollywood side.
Ooh, good. So I'm going to kill a
guys,
model.
Guys, let me pitch.
Oh, okay. Great. Okay. Great.
No, we're running out of time. Come on.
Great. Great. Hurry up.
So, guys,
sorry, we have another meeting with a big client.
There's
the
a guy
devil.
I just want to mention there's a guy coming in pitching a new NCIS show. So,
no, all right.
Hurry Ben Affleck's writing another Batman
can
movie.
I have my time,
yeah, sure. Okay, great. Yeah, let's definitely. This is really important.
Yeah.
So the
really
devil.
Meeting.
The devil.
Can I get you a
did
water?
Did I mention
I gotta
get a? I gotta get a green juice.
Do you need a water?
I gotta get a green juice.
Fuck you and your green juice.
I gotta tell you, you're not particularly selling us.
Well, I haven't. You haven't given me a chance.
You're not selling us.
Lucifer's amazing show.
I don't know. Did you set up?
The characters are
meeting?
Fantastic. The relationship between the devil and the good family.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We have a lot
that's
of meetings.
That's all the time we have for Pete's
we have a lot of
corner.
Meetings today.
Yeah, it was a fantastic finale.
Do you want a water on the way out?
Also, I know you got emotional over the Supergirl finale as well.
Oh, are we being real now?
No, I think we transitioned out of the scene.
Oh, okay. Supergirl was amazing. It was wonderful. I hope it gets a second season.
Me too.
Okay, great. Wow, that got so earnest. That was weird.
Yeah, there we go.
I was going to make fun of you, but now I feel weird.
Yeah, that's fine. Please don't.
Please
you
don't.
You didn't watch Supergirl?
No, I did not. No, I'm sorry.
Do you want to pitch it to him real quick?
No, I don't. I don't want to pitch it to him. Let's start the fucking show.
All right.
Wow.
That's how we always like to transition into our guests. Really set him up very well. But I am actually very excited about the folks that we have on today. They both have amazing books coming out from IDW Publishing. One is the writer of Street Fighter G.I. Joe, and the other is X-Files, which is coming back with an all-new number one.
Yeah.
Which
is
super cool. Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Harris and Aubrey Sinister!
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome.
Come on out.
Please.
Welcome.
Come
on out.
Please
come
have
on.
A seat.
Hello.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hello. All right,
awesome.
Guys.
Have a seat.
Up a chair.
Have a microphone.
Very exciting to have you guys on. What do you want to say bad about IDW? Just let's start off with that.
Wow.
No.
Really? Gotcha.
Am I dying to say, or do I want to slam?
Yeah. How many jobs do you want to lose when you're on
Street
the show?
Fighter G.I. Joe should be 14 issues at least, and there's still time. That's
yeah?
Nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. That,
there's still,
the
still
is,
time for us to
the bad thing is there's not enough of it.
Yeah. That's a positive slam.
Yeah.
It was interesting that both of you guys got booked on the show because X-Files, Street Fighter, G.I. Joe, they're both licensed properties, but otherwise there's really nothing that connects them, right? Other than the IDW-ness. I mean, I feel like people often take licensed properties and comics, lump them all in together as if they're all one thing, but they're not. Not even close.
No, I mean, there's a lot to be licensed out there, right? And it's more vibrant and... I mean, when I was a kid, there was a handful of stuff that got licensed. Some of them were good. A lot of them were, you know, maybe not so good, and it had a reputation of being that.
Yeah.
But today, companies like IDW, I think they make the whole thing very vibrant and engaging, and they're feeding an audience that wasn't getting served previously, and it's great.
Well, yeah. I think the idea of extending the life of licensed properties via comics is amazing for fans because
sure.
It's the I don't know how the budgets work, but I think a comic book budget is smaller than a television show.
Slightly.
If
I know
only
I
we could draw
less.
Actors, yeah. But so that lets us see everything that we want to see.
I take issue a little bit with the distinction between licensed comics and non-licensed comics, honestly. Mm. Get on my high horse for a minute. But, no, like...
For those of you listening at home, there's a literal horse in the theater.
Yeah.
He's right.
It's not a pony. It's a horse. Yeah. It's a high horse.
When people say licensed comics, they typically mean a comic, like a property that is on loan and rented from another company. Right. And then they're able to go off and do a comic book about it. And I think a lot of people have this perception that, oh, well, once you have that many cooks in the kitchen, once you have that many people involved, these bean counters and stuff, involved with the property, it's impossible to do good creative work. I think that's lunacy because, I mean, first of all, because look at these guys, the amazing work they're doing on licensed books, right? Number one. But number two, if you think a comic book containing characters like Superman or Spider-Man or Star Wars characters doesn't have just as many people involved at some level in terms of just okaying character motivations and big plot points and things like that, you're out of your mind. You know, the licensed comic book distinction, I think, as comic book companies become these big IP farms, the distinction between licensed books and non-licensed books, it's evaporating. There isn't really much.
You don't have to run your storylines past Snake Eyes at all?
Well, I wait forever to hear back. He's silent! Hey. He doesn't talk!
He's very quiet. Big texter, though. That guy's
Let's talk about how you ended up on Street Fighter G.I. Joe. How did that project come together?
Yeah, you know, IDW reached out to me after, you know, it was already a thing. And they had already decided they were going to do that. So you're asking about, like, further back than that, right?
No.
I don't know how you got involved.
How did you get involved yeah. in the project?
John Barber.
Could you take it back to the beginning of Street Fighter?
I'd be happy to give you a little bit of backstory on how it came together in a company, too.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Would you like that
as
well?
Yeah, like, what are Blanca's secret moves?
Blanca's always one of my favorites because I liked all the characters that all you need to do is tap one button a lot and they do something cool.
Very basic.
Blanca, Ihonda, Chun-Li. But yeah, Capcom actually came to IDW. IDW has been doing amazing stuff lately with their crossovers, right? One of my favorites is Transformers G.I. Joe. It's bonkers. Yeah. If you haven't read it, it's bonkers in the best absolute way. Capcom came to them wanting to crossover with G.I. Joe. It's something that they had never really officially done. In the 90s, there were Street Fighter toys released through the G.I. Joe line, if people remember those. So there is some history of working together, but not in any real meaningful way. So they came to Capcom specifically wanting this story. And IDW hadn't done work with Capcom before. They hadn't done Street Fighter stuff before. And John Barber, my editor there, he knew that I am a big, big pro wrestling fan and a big, big kung fu movie fan. And I love fight-based storytelling. And so he thought I would be the guy. Say again?
You're the perfect guy for this.
That's the thing. That's what he thought, too. And so he reached out to me, and I pitched this thing that was, you know, very much about putting fighting front and center. It's
nice.
It's a 16-man tournament. It's like King of the Ring if you're a WWE fan. And it is just fights. The first issue is...
Yes!
Yeah, right? Four fights in 20 pages, so about 5 pages each. And I think there's the big fight graphic on the second page. It is all killer, no filler. But, you know, like professional wrestling or kung fu movies, we weave the character motivations and story into the fights themselves.
That was just speaking Pete's language.
I've been giving this pitch a lot lately, boys. I'm raring to go.
Well, Pete's hormones are racing right now.
You touched on this a little bit, but it even has, from the art perspective, it has the video game layouts, like two characters facing off against each other, fight in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, that's an intentional choice, you know, like, because the way I see something like, especially, you know, so talking about licensed properties, right? Like, what Joe does is very different from what I'm doing with Street Fighter G.I. Joe, right? Like,
Mulder versus, Mulder versus Scully.
The one button thing, though. I don't know. I think it applies.
No, but, you know, coming into something like Street Fighter G.I. Joe, I looked at it like, I tried to find the Venn diagram, right? Like, what are all the things that, like, we want to scratch all the itches of the Street Fighter fans, we also want to scratch all the itches of the G.I. Joe fans, and for me, that comes down to fighting, right? But along the way, right? Let's call it spade a spade. And it's fighting. That's why it's all about fighting. But along the way, I wanted to, you know, give people those jolts of nostalgia. Like, let's not fool ourselves. That's why people tune into big crossovers like this. Like, I hope that we bring something different, and I'm confident that we have. We've brought something substantial and meaningful within the fights,
But you don't want to lose sight of the reason something like this exists, which is, you know, nostalgia-based. But, and this is something I was really, really cognizant of moving into it, I didn't want it to just be nostalgia for the stuff I grew up with. I didn't want it to be just a loving glance back at Street Fighter II, right? Which is my personal favorite because of how old I am.
Yeah. who's a big Street Fighter I fan?
There aren't a lot of them.
One guy. Really? What was that even like?
That was the 8-bit one where he's literally fighting a street, right?
Like
it wasn't even, you know, it wasn't, Street Fighter 2 is where it really crystallized into the fighting game that it is now known as, with multiple characters and different stages and stuff like that. But yeah, so I knew that there are a lot of Street Fighter fans right now who are a lot younger than me. And for them, the defining Street Fighter game is the most recent one, Street Fighter 4. So that's why I, of the 8 Street Fighter characters in the tournament, 3 of them made their debut in Street Fighter 4. Like, that was an intentional thing. I wanted to have, like, a mix of these different eras.
The most interesting thing to me when I was reading this is that feeling of you're reading the fights, you think, as a fan of Street Fighter, as a fan of G.I. Joe, oh, this is how the fight's going to turn out, and it doesn't turn out that way. That when you're playing the video game, it's determined by who has the better skill. When you're arguing with something, it's determined by who has the better arguing skills, but you get to make the final determination with these fights. What was that power like?
It was mind-blowing. I blacked out for a day and a half. it was great, and it's something I took seriously. And being a big professional wrestling fan, I know the importance of not just who wins, but how they win.
Yeah.
And so when I built out the brackets for this thing, which is how I pitched it to them, I sent them, you know, here's our Sweet 16 brackets of everybody involved, and here's who wins and progresses on, and here's how we're breaking out the fights into each issue to get, like, maximum dramatic impact, right? I booked it like you would King of the Ring or, you know, New Japan Cup or whatever. I was really, really careful throughout, though, to make sure that nobody looks like a joke unless they're meant to look like a joke, right? And there are some characters like that in the Street Fighter universe, certainly. That's their, my French is lousy. The Raisin, can you help me out? Raisin d'etre?
Raisin d'etre?
Is that right?
Raisin d'etre.
Raisin d'etre, yeah.
Well, that's really good.
That's very good. I'm very impressed.
I've been to Montreal.
Great. No, so, I mean, I spent a lot of time making sure that the outcomes of the fight didn't just get me the progression that I wanted to the next fight, but also there are stories in each fight, as well as kind of overarching stories for each character as they go about the different rounds of this thing. So yeah, it was something I stressed out about a lot, and it was something I took really seriously, and I was petrified. I was going to send this thing in, and they're going to send it to Capcom, and they would say, oh, come on. They would never beat Crimson Viper. That's impossible. That would never happen. To their credit, on both the Hasbro side and the Capcom side, I didn't hear that back one single time. And if you've read it, there's some upsets. There's some serious, serious upsets.
There are.
Yeah.
Pete's going to scream.
Yeah. Can you give us some of the matchups that we have in this Sweet 16 Battle Royale?
Yeah, so I don't want to spoil anything, so I'll go first round. Is
okay.
That fair?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil any of the situations if you start from the beginning. Yeah. So first round, you're going to get Snake Eyes versus Crimson Viper.
Right out of the box, you go with Snake
that
Eyes?
That is the first. I want to start strong, baby.
Wow.
The first match. That is page 2. That match is fully embroiled.
It makes a lot of sense. Yeah, it's broiling. It's fully broiling.
Next up, we got Baroness versus Rufus.
Wow.
Rufus is another Street Fighter IV character. Mm. We also have... Oh, man. It's been a minute since I wrote the first issue. I should have come better prepared, huh? Oh, no. It ends with Jinx versus Ryu, though, which is like a big money match. Yeah. And it happens in the first round of the tournament. You can't control Jinx. Seeding, right? In a tournament.
I will say, without spoiling anything, to your point, the third issue comes out tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
There is a huge upset, I would say, in that issue. To my mind.
There's a big upset. I mean, I like to think there's a big upset in every issue. The way it's scripted, but yeah, you're right. And that one actually, you know what? If people read the preview even for this thing, that big upset's in the first 5 pages of the issue.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Can't wait, man.
Wait, Pete, what would be your ultimate Street Fighter versus G.I. Joe matchup?
Interesting.
I mean, it's got to come down to Snake Eyes versus, like, Ryu. I feel like the main kind of...
Yeah.
So one of the things I... you don't get that fight.
Damn.
Let's just get right out there.
I'm not right.
You don't get that. The brackets don't work out that way. But one of the things I struggled to do was, you know, I had a lot of people be like, oh, you should have Quick Kick versus Fei Long. Right? Because they're both the Bruce Lee-influenced kung fu characters. Right. I struggled not to do that.
Yeah, because you want different skill sets.
Bingo.
Matching
yeah,
up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, because to me, that's the most interesting thing about the crossovers. It's not watching Superman fight the Superman knockoff or whatever, you know?
Yeah,
like,
Batman.
It's somebody totally different, right? Like, I would rather see Superman versus Daredevil. That's a more interesting Marvel versus DC.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
DC
nice.
Matchup to me, because I don't know how that's going to go. I tried not to do those obvious matches.
Interesting.
Okay. Cases.
All right, it's a kick in my face.
Because it'd be more interesting to have Pete versus Snake Eyes.
I'd pay for that.
Yeah. Would you?
We would all pay for that.
Oh,
all
right.
But I'm also super excited about X-Files number one coming out.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had a question about that.
Okay.
Which is the continuity of your X-Files book. So you've written...
Which X-Files book?
That's the question.
Okay.
So can you talk us through... You've written now several X-Files books.
Yes.
For IDW.
Yes.
How does it work out? How do they lay out?
Well, the new number one that's coming out tomorrow is brand new, and it sort of takes place somewhere around where we left off with the last episode on Fox, sometime after that's been resolved.
Right,
okay. Because we're not going to touch that cliffhanger. It's
which was a bit of a cliffhanger.
That's for them to deal with. And this is different from the previous two series that I've done, which we called the X-Files Season 10 and Season 11, which first launched about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that had started long before there was any. There was no inkling that anything was coming back to Fox. There was no movement at all. No one had been publishing the X-Files as comics for a little while. And IDW went and got the license. It was the 20th anniversary was coming up in 2013. And there was an appetite to do X-Files stories. And we had the benefit of being the only game in town. So we were able to, after Chris Carter came on board, because I had gone through this series of hirings in which first IDW, the publisher, liked what I had pitched them, and Fox then approved. We had started putting this thing together when Chris Carter sort of inserted himself into this process, which was both a surprise and a thrill and an honor. That would be three things, but
both.
But we were able to basically build with his involvement. We were able to build this originally as canon, which nice. Fox was cool with, and he was cool with. I was intimidated by, but
pretty cool with.
You weren't throwing up
a red flag like, I would rather be not canon.
It was,
you know, just like Hemingway was like, you know what, throw my books in the garbage.
Is that a thing that happened?
Yeah, that's why he killed himself.
Because
sorry, guys.
Too soon.
Real Hemingway heads
we'll
out
fix
there.
Fix that in post, I imagine.
Yeah, right? No, we'll edit that out, I'm sure.
Yeah, oh, definitely. That's too extreme for our audience.
So we got to do that for a few years, and then, you know, the show rematerialized, and Chris had his own stories he wanted to do, and so basically we decided soon after we launched season 11 that we were going to wind down and then relaunch, that it more closely followed what the show was doing and the characters looked like they look today, and sort of whatever tweaks to the original paradigm were made would be recognizable in the comics and so on.
So what I'm most curious about for you from the writing perspective,
right.
You were creating the canon for season 10, creating
yes.
the canon for season 11,
mm-hmm.
and then the TV show came back, did what it did, and now did you feel like you needed to twist what you were thinking about for the characters when you were approaching this new series?
I mean, a little bit, but I mean, we got to do a really satisfying long run through season 10 and season 11. And, you know, there was this long, you know, we call it the myth arc that runs through all the mythology episodes. And we built out this little piece of that, I think, that we did a pretty good job with. And we, you know, we reached back into continuity and pulled an old ally of Mulder and Scully out of the past and sort of made him, built him up to be sort of the super foil for them.
Yeah.
And that went on for through season 10 and 11. And we got to tell this story. And I would have loved to have kept to keep going on the one hand, but with the show coming back, people are just, I mean, everybody is so excited about the show coming back, and the love for these characters is so strong, and I get a lot of it, shown in my direction sometimes, how much people really love this, and it's not really about what I would prefer to do. I mean, I still love writing Mulder and Scully, and a lot of what I was originally doing still applies. I mean, the essence of the characters is still very much the same. Their past experiences that inform a lot of what they went through on the show just recently in The Return and what they're going to do in the comics coming up is still the same as what I was basing the iterations of the characters on before. So,
was there anything that happened in the miniseries where you saw it happen and you're like, ah, goddammit.
Yeah.
he's going to do that.
You know, it's funny. There was we did a sequel in season 11 to Home, which is everybody's favorite horrible episode with the Peacock family and all the mutants and the incest and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And the infamous episode that was only showed
it,
once.
It sounds all right.
Yeah. You're like, send me that clip, dude.
So that had come out just as the title of one of the episodes of the returning series came out, which was also called Home Again, but had nothing to do with the Peacocks. But there was a little bit of cross googling going on as you. This was all sort of impacting at the same time. But aside from that, no. I mean, I was inspired by a lot of it. Just seeing Mulder and Scully walking and talking again. The scenes with Scully's mother dying and Mulder being in the hospital that just connected to so many things that I grew up loving and so many of the fans that I get to talk to adore. So I just came away, with a lot to think about out of those episodes, but nothing stronger than the enduring appeal of these characters.
Nice. I feel like the sort of the episode that got the most love of the last series was the Were-Lizard episode,
Great. Darren Morgan's episode.
Yeah, which was great, super fun. Does that make you, and that was sort of a Monster of the Week episode, definitely a non-mythology episode, does that make you like, oh, you know what, I'm going to insert more of that? Or that's. I feel like that's sort of the two paths that so many X-Files episodes.
Well, we do both. I mean, we aspire to do. I mean, we try both. Let's put it that way. I mean, we do mythology, multi-part stories, and we do shorter stories that we call Monster of the Month issues. Although they're usually 2 months long, and for the most part, that was such a great episode. I mean, not just for how quirky fun it was, but just sort of the interaction with Mulder and Scully, just contemplating their place in this, it
felt like the most playful, like they felt like really the most alive in that episode, I felt like, because there was so much story going on.
A lot of
the
Easter
ones.
Eggs in that episode,
Before we move on,
okay,
Street Fighter versus G.I. Joe versus X-Files. Who wins?
Smoking Man.
The fans.
That's all. Don't applaud that. That's terrible.
There you go.
Absolutely abhorrent.
I would like to say though that I saw a couple preview pages of the number one. It really looks amazing.
Thank you. Matthew Dow Smith is doing an amazing job. Jordy Belair coloring over Matthew. Still,
she's phenomenal.
She really is, and we're lucky to have her. And yeah, it looks great. I'm really excited about this.
One
book.
Thing that I will say, again, without spoiling anything about the issue, it feels very relevant, which is something the X-Files always feels like it kind of exists out of time, but this is touching on certain things in today's world, and it does it very relevantly.
Thank you. I mean, there are a few topical things coming up. I think the X-Files easily translates to 2016 and beyond. Mm-hmm. I mean, we live in a world with lots of stuff to check out. We live in a world of drone warfare and secret stealing and Stuxnet worms and all sorts of stuff that
I don't know what the last one was,
but that's fucked up that you said.
Right?
That's fucked up that you said that.
You're lucky they're on the job.
Yeah, I'm terrified of that, whatever that
was. Wait, Stuxnet worms are on the job?
No.
The Mulder and Scully.
Mulder and Scully. Mulder, okay.
So watch out. Oh, by the way, I gave you a Stuxnet worm. So that's going to...
Happy birthday to me.
Yeah, it's going to screw up a lot of your lunches and dinners.
Okay, that's fine. That's all right. As long as he's on the job. X-Files number one and Street Fighter G.I. Joe number three both come out tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
All right, check them out in comic book stores. We're going to move on with our next section, which we like to call the stack.
Yeah!
Hooray! And in the stack, we're going to talk about some books that came out this week that we particularly like. We'll start off with Pete's pick, which is Chew, Demon Chicken Pollo One Shot from Image Comics.
One Shot. About a chicken.
Pete, so
before the show, before you review,
you gave yourself a hat.
I was just trying to get people excited about this.
So before the show, when we were making our picks, and you said, hey, what's your pick? You also added and said to me, is it one of those shitty animal books that you always like?
I did not say that.
No,
you're putting words in my mouth.
To be fair, you did. And be fair, you do pick a lot of shitty animal books.
All right, fair enough.
You weren't even here yet. You strolled in.
Your book is about a demon chicken. Go on.
Yeah. Yes, this is about a demon chicken. I really love... the artist and the writer on this do like an amazing job of like layering. There's a lot of fun stuff going on. You can flip back through the
is
comic.
Is it John Layman and Rob Gilroy? Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
Indeed.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they do a great job of like putting little stuff in corners, having little kind of jokes all throughout the comic. And I just think it's so smart, so funny, and it just... I never get tired of reading Chew. It's just one of those constant books that is very creative, very well done, and the demon chicken, they've killed off, and he's even better than ever. It's really amazing.
That sentence didn't make any sense to you, real quick. So in the book Chew, there's an unstoppable cybernetic chicken named Pollo who died, got sent to hell, immediately took over hell.
Right.
And so this one shot somehow is a Christmas special focused
on...
Surprise Christmas special told entirely in rhyme that's a parody of The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, starring this demon chicken who's taken over hell and is sometimes fighting multiversal battles.
Right.
Now the thing
it's a little crazy.
The thing with Chew is, what is it with chickens?
What do you mean? They're an unstoppable force.
Yeah, I get that. But I feel like every time, because I don't read this book, every time you pick it, I'm like, Jesus, all they talk about is chickens.
Right.
Those are just all the best issues.
Yeah, exactly.
The
chickens.
They focus on chickens. And maybe so you have a thing for chickens.
I think they're great.
Do you guys read Chew? Have you ever?
I am way far behind. But can I just, as a guy who's not caught up and hasn't read the issue that we're talking about, I think I'm dying to say, is it how amazing it is that it's Layman and Guillory? Right?
What?
That it's Layman and Guillory, right? Yeah. That it's them doing the one shot. A lot of times, especially on creator-owned books, they'll use a one shot or a miniseries or just like even a issue in the midst of the run, right? Mm-hmm. That's just a standalone thing. It's a chance to let the artist catch up and bring somebody else in. And it always feels a little off to me, right? It doesn't feel like the real team.
Yeah.
Because a book like Chew is so closely identified with not just Layman, but also Guillory and his visual approach to it. So the fact that both of them are on it together, that's awesome.
I wonder,
it's a great thing for a one shot.
So this book, I love Chew Chew. I know we've been taking the piss out of you, but this issue is crazy, like totally over the top insane.
Yes.
And I wonder, to your point of them taking a break, if this is kind of them blowing off steam, because Chew is always very funny, it's always very crazy, but it's been so dark for so long, and it's reaching its end game, and this might be their way of being like, let's just get a bunch of craziness out of the way, refresh our brains a little bit, because so many people have been dying, and there's so many high stakes for what's been going on in the main book.
Yeah, you can tell they're really having a lot of fun in this.
Yeah, it's ludicrous. I mean, if you'd never picked up a Chew book, you might have a little bit of a hard time getting into this, but it's really fun, and the art is really good as well. Let's move on with your pick. This is Deadly Hands of Criminal. Number nothing.
Yeah, it's a criminal one-shot, 10-year anniversary, I guess, one-shot, you could say.
10 years since Criminal started?
I believe so. Oh, I think that's what this issue is. And it's if you haven't read any of these, they are great. They're just crime stories.
The magazine size is amazing.
I bought the magazine size, which is a special release. That cover plays into the story. The kid in the story
gets meta, dude.
Yeah, it really blows your mind how they did that by having the same art in it and on the cover. So the story is a father and son. The father is
an awful human being.
Yeah, that's your judgment. He's a pretty decent criminal.
You gotta be better than that, Dad.
Thanks, man.
Yep.
Thanks, man. I'm going to really aspire to that.
Hey, Justin, since you're having a kid soon, try to be a better dad than the one in the comic called Criminal.
No, I can aim for that. Is this an intervention? have you guys been reading the parenting book? This is my parenting guide. Is that
right?
How it works?
Chew, Demon Chicken Pollo is actually my parenting guide.
It shows. Your children are evil. I should say that.
Yeah. They love chicken, though.
They love chicken.
Who doesn't?
This is a great follow-up to all the other criminal books, and it just is great crime. It's sort of a love letter to comic books in general and how important comic books are to kids, no matter what situation they're in. great, great issue.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking and heartfelt in the same issue. You have this like awful relationship with the father and son, and then kind of like a beautiful relationship with this with the son and the little girl, and it's just like. It's magical and awful at the same time, and it's also like has the story about comics in it. So it's just a lot of layers, but it's really
so you
fantastic.
Liked it.
Yeah, I really loved it.
Oh, wow. It reminds me of the criminal arc that they did that was very Archie influenced. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh right.
Yeah, like I mean, like in Brubaker and I'm sorry, Sean Phillips.
Phillips
are so good at doing this like straight faced, clenched teeth. Crime stuff, yeah. But it's also great when they get a chance to kind of like the listen through lines that Demon Chicken Pollo comic. Like it's also fun when they get a little room,
a little jam set,
yeah, like a little room to play and like do these more formalist aspect things. And like is the regular sized issue? Is it the same content or is it like the Quentin Tarantino Roadshow where it's like,
yeah, this is sort of a roadshow book. Is you it? Guys got to get on board.
Does it have extra? Does it have extra stuff?
I think it's the same content
because the back
maybe
matter,
the back pages are different.
The back matter in this is dope.
Yeah, very cool.
This one. I'm loving it.
If you've never picked up Criminal, by the way, fantastic series. Basically, a series of I don't want to say short stories because some of them are kind of long.
Limited
but
series.
It's essentially a rebooted 2000s version of crime comics that often is, as you probably gathered, commenting on old crime comics in a certain way. Mm. But it's great. It's really good.
Very good.
Cool. Last pick, The Mighty Thor, number 6 from Marvel Comics. Hooray.
Yeah, okay. Great. 2 to 3.
Easy. All right, there we go. I love this book. This book is...
very good.
Every single issue is amazing. This is Jason Aaron and Russell Dauterman. I'm forgetting who the guest artist is in this issue.
The art is unbelievable.
Yeah. But so in the overall Thor book, spoiler, Jane Foster, Thor's longtime girlfriend, is the new Thor. At the same time, Thor, the Thor we know, has been captured in some sort of weird alien prison, lost his arm, lost his name, lost his reputation. The big cliffhanger at the end of the last issue was we finally saw what was going on with Thor Odinson, after many, many issues. Here, we take a little bit of a left turn. Loki, as usual, is being an evil dick. He teams up with the other evil dick, the head of Roxxon. Roxxon says, hey, I want to form a side alliance with you. And Loki's like, oh, that's interesting. Let me tell you a story about side alliances. And they proceed to flash back to Viking times, and we get a story of classic Thor.
And it's also about, like, there's a big whole prayer thing about, like, who you worship and what that means.
It's what I think betrayal. Is great about this and great about the series in general is Jason Aaron is just telling so many different types of stories about Thor and the world of Thor that even when you're doing something that's a Viking story, it feels fresh and new and exciting in a way that Thor hasn't for probably decades at this point. It's great.
And then you see at the end of the issue, very light spoiler that like the Viking Hulk shows up.
Yeah.
So that's like it goes in and out of these like here's sort of a tale, a Viking tale. It's like nope, the fucking Hulk's there too later, and that's it's just so good.
Yeah, it's just so many things. Pete, do you like this book?
Yeah, I can't say enough about like how the art really transported you to this Viking time and did such a it really sucks you in and helps tell this amazing story. Big fan.
There's only one thing that I take a little bit of an issue with. So they've had this thing in comics for a couple of years now where every once in a while Loki reinvents himself. I think it was pretty much since he died and came back.
It's like
their
Madonna.
Kid.
He's like the Marvel Universe Madonna.
I'd say Lady Gaga. That's a little more current, but you know, whatever you want to go with.
I like the classics. I'm sorry.
Right, all right, that's fine. So he reinvents himself all the time.
Weird fight to have. cool, though.
This is a hell I'm going to die.
A couple of issues ago, Loki came back into the fold. We saw this new invention of Loki, and he has a little bit of a pube beard going on.
He has a shitty beard.
He has a shitty beard.
It's like he shaved a couple days before every issue he appears in.
He's a bad guy, though. He should have a shitty beard.
No, yeah, but he's shitty.
I don't want a beard that I envy on a villain. I want a, a beard that makes me hate a guy.
I love a villain that has a sweet
an
beard.
An envious beard.
Like a pointy beard.
Like you have a very nice beard.
Yeah, but I'm the hero in this environment. I don't know if you know what I'm saying. I'm the hero of this story.
No, I'm sorry. You're sort of like the saber tooth of the show right now.
Yeah. Anyway, it just looks like he took a bunch of pubes off the floor and glued them to his face.
And he is portrayed that way in every issue. And it just undercuts a lot of his intimidation factor, as a lot of puby beards do, for those of you out there.
Yeah, there you go.
Can I say something about how great Russell Dowderman is, though?
Yeah, amazing.
He's phenomenal. I remember first seeing his work, and I was like, oh, you know, he's cool. It's cool he's doing, like, a Olivier Coipel thing, especially because it was on Thor, and, like, yeah. Like the similarities jumped out at me. But, man, that guy's hit another gear. It's really phenomenal stuff. I met that guy recently. Yeah, this is a funny story. I'm prepping you for it, so you know when to laugh.
Wow.
I had met him before, apparently, though. I met him at WonderCon, and he said, I remember you from when I was interning at Marvel, and I was like, oh, Christ, was I mean to you? And I wasn't, thankfully.
Were interning, and he...
No, I was an editor, and
he
was
an editor,
interning.
He was interning.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought you were the meanest intern.
I didn't last
That's
very long.
That's not a real thing.
No, I didn't
hey,
last
very long. Hey, Mr. Donnerman, here's your fucking coffee.
Yeah, why?
No, but apparently I was nice to that guy, which I was to all interns, because why wouldn't you be?
That's great. Right.
So it's not so much a funny story, it's about me being great.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw it out there.
I mean, I don't know.
Sounds like a villain. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, nice pube beard, dude. Aww. All right, that's it for the stack.
Big slam.
All right, guys. We always like to really abuse our guests, if possible.
No, it's true.
Joe, you're an asshole.
Heroes need villains to overcome, you know, obstacles.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Oh, he's nice. Challenging you.
Guys, we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because we turn over to you guys. It's your audience questions.
Yeah.
So for this, I'm going to come out to you guys, and any question you have, you're going to get some free swag. We got some free comics. Do we have posters for Mod Hero?
Yes, we do.
Today? Posters for Mod Hero. And it could be absolutely anything. It could be for one of our amazing guests here. It could be something generally geeky about anything. Just raise your hand. You're going to get some free stuff. You, sir, I saw your hand first. I'll come over to you. What is your name, and what is your question?
My name is EJ, and
what's up, EJ?
We just got information that the Inhumans movie got pulled from the Marvel movie lineup. Do you think that might have something to do with the X-Men movies, since the Inhumans were kind of replacing the X-Men in the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
No. Interesting.
Whoa.
No, it's interesting.
So the background is... I think that story has gotten a little blown out of proportion. I'm not the Marvel PR department or anything like that. But they didn't pull it from the schedule. They pushed it back to keep working on it, which is something that happens a lot anyway. And certainly it seems all doom and gloom, but...
That Lockjaw CG doesn't come overnight, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You got to put the hours in.
You got to put some... You can't just
have
a regular
talk. Yeah, and Vin Diesel
talk.
Has been in his house practicing not talking for months at this point.
And I think we want to keep that going as long as possible.
Yeah. I thought, if anything, my first thought when I read the headline that it had been pulled from the schedule, that, oh, does it have to do with this rumored behind-the-scenes fractious nature between Marvel TV and Marvel film because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been doing the Inhuman arc. But I think, end of the day, they probably just want to do a good movie, and they don't want to say, great, let's add 17 people when we're concentrating on these other things. Let's instead work on the script. But if you guys think there's a conspiracy theory, let's hear it.
Oh, wow. Gee, what an aggressive take on this. Why are you in our face about it?
Come on! Bring it! Fuck you guys.
So wait, your point...
Not only did you shit on us, you shit on him for asking the question.
I'm sorry. I've
why
had
you
a really
down
week.
EJ?
Yeah, man.
EJ, you're my best friend. I love you, buddy. I hate you fuckers.
Yeah. So you're saying they're waiting for some of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. characters to die off so they have fewer of them?
No. I think it has nothing to do with that. I think it's probably just they're like, that's approaching pretty rapidly. We have two gigantic Avengers films coming out. Let's actually figure out our schedule. You know, what Kevin Feige said was, now we have Spider-Man in the mix, so they probably want to slot in a Spider-Man 2 and a Black Panther
Maybe
2.
We're working on getting the X-Men. Why would we even need the Inhumans then?
Right.
Well, let's hope not.
That's my conspiracy theory that I just snuck in. Later.
See ya. Bye, Justin. Bye.
Well, what do you guys think? Is there any conspiracy theory going on here?
Man, EJ, you broke the news to me. I had no idea. So, I don't know. I haven't had time to think. I doubt it. I think, I don't know, like... Generally speaking, these decisions are made, like you're saying, just to give a little more time for the movie. I have no idea. I have no inside information or thoughts on it. But I just wanted to make sure I got
Joe. Sounds like Joe has inside information.
Joe's got a big.
I have no inside information. I mean, I think they're just following where the talk is right now. I mean, everybody's excited about Captain America, and everybody's excited about this other stuff. It wouldn't surprise me if that cause some people to shuffle the planning.
Push back.
Yeah, exactly. I think they probably just looked at budgets and thought, oh, we're going to start a massive superhero team epic franchise, or we could give all that money to Chris Evans to do a Captain America.
Let me just say, if I were listening to this, I would think we were responsible for it being delayed, because we're all like, no, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. We're working on it. It's going to be great. It's going to be great in the long run. We're working on it. It's great. Bye-bye.
We definitely don't have that power, but we have that power.
Yeah,
all right, great question.
We're
going to take another question. You, sir, right over here, you're actually going to have to come up and around because this mic is very terrible and short.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry. What's your name? What's your question?
Hey, my name's Destiny.
Destiny?
Hi, Pete.
Nice.
You said that you wanted to do like different and like unexpected matchups for Street Fighter versus G.I. Joe. What's like the most unconventional matchup you can tell us about?
Ah, nice.
Ooh, great question.
In the very first issue, the second fight is Rufus versus Crimson Viper. So I'll give you a little bit of background in case you're not familiar with both of them. Rufus versus Baroness. Baroness is from Cobra, right? And she is this very self-serious, femme fatale, like alpha female, handling everything herself.
Badass.
And very high opinion of herself, right? And she goes up against Rufus, who's one of my favorite characters from Street Fighter. He's from Street Fighter 4, and he is a, how shall we say, corpulent gentleman from America.
Nice.
And he's got this big, blonde, like, braided ponytail, and he wears, like, a Bruce Lee yellow jumpsuit, and he does very, very over-the-top movie-based kung fu, and he talks constantly, and he has an outsized opinion and confidence in himself. And so the take someone as self-serious and centered as Baroness and put her up against somebody who's just this big ball of hot air. It's in the first issue, and it's still one of my favorite fights that I actually wrote, because they're so wildly different from one another that, like, before they even fight, just talking with one another, there's so much combativeness in that interaction.
Cool. Nice.
Do you guys have a favorite versus type thing? Like, favorite matchup, favorite, we'll ignore Batman v Superman for the moment, but any...
I think that's everybody's current
sure.
favorite. Yeah.
But favorite comics matchup that you've seen?
Justin versus Pete, obviously.
Ooh, sure.
Constant.
I mean, I'll say JLA Avengers is one of my favorite books like that. It's just so fun. I feel like there's that little reference in there that I think about all the time where the Marvel superheroes are in space. I think they're in the Watchtower with the Justice League, and they look down at the Justice League Earth, and they're like, huh, your East Coast is larger, because they notice that Metropolis and Gotham City are both
extra
there.
Extra cities.
It's just a fun little detail.
Yeah.
It's fun.
That was your favorite thing about the versus fight.
Yeah, it's a great fight.
I love geography.
He loves a good man.
Let me ask you a question, Pete. Do you have an answer to my question yet?
Yes. I would have to say, because to me, like, a real great versus is you have to be on board with the fight. You really have to believe that these two people should be fighting, and it's not just an excuse.
So, like, Mephisto versus marriage.
Yeah. No,
see, you have to. You no, ask me a question, and then you fucking ruin it.
Marriage has had it out for Mephisto for years.
I would have to
years.
Say the kind of big schism event where it was, you know, kind of the X-Men broken apart, and where Wolverine fought Cyclops. That to me was like a huge emotional battle that was like
it'd been built up for a while.
Yeah, that was like to me like such a huge event that really sticks out to me.
Nice.
What was what's that line? Is it Wolverine says it to Cyclops after he's trying to reason with him, and he just looks at him and is like, "She never loved you."
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
he just blasts the shit out of him.
Yeah,
great moment.
Oh wow, I thought you were gonna be
no,
about
it's
it.
Great.
No,
I love that moment.
That was nice.
It comes out of they're having this ideological argument, and then Wolverine brings it down to this guttural level that any X-Men fan understands, and it just becomes a battle royale. It's great.
Yeah,
what's your fave?
I mean, I was thinking of the Executioner's song for some reason, where X-Force sort of battled all the X-Men, and then they all got together to take down Strife.
To this day, that's one of my favorite comic book crossover events
of
all time.
It's very good. Yeah, I don't know.
Strife's one of my favorite X-Men villains for that and for that reason alone.
Yeah. Wow.
Very sharp, that guy. Joe,
so
do you have a favorite versus comic?
Oh, God. When you started talking about it, I don't know if it applies, but I was thinking back to the original Acts of Vengeance event from when I was a kid, just mixing up everybody's arch enemy with another hero and just seeing how it came out in the wash. And Yeah, Jim Lee on X-Men with Chris Claremont with Mandarin, and yeah. Just a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah. And Aubrey, other than your own, do you have?
Other than my own, I mentioned it earlier, but Transformers G.I. Joe.
Oh, right.
You can't say enough good things about Transformers G.I. Joe. What Tom Scioli and John Barber have done is they have abstracted both concepts to an extreme degree, to the point where you are seeing them as action figures, which sounds like it would be devoid of drama, but it's actually not, because everything feels heightened and surreal the way it was when you were a kid playing with these things. And wow. It's not a book about nuance or subtlety, and it shouldn't be, because it's about eliciting these extreme, visceral reactions to these characters behaving in ways that you kind of always wanted them to behave in and yeah. didn't always do necessarily.
That's cool. Awesome. I had a Firestorm action figure versus the Baron Zemo action figure when I was like 7.
That sounds pretty dope.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was a great match.
That's, you know what? I changed mine.
Great answer.
Cool. We can take another question. You, sir, right there, come on up or come on down and ask your question. What's your name? What's your question?
Hey, I'm Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Transformers versus G.I. Joe is the best comic.
Listen, have you read Street Fighter G.I. Joe?
Not yet.
Okay, well, let's not say things we can't take back.
For that, no, but I'm glad you mentioned that, because for like pure like comic bookery, it might be the best thing.
That was a bit of a statement.
Yeah, so I had this question. I hope I can differentiate it from the versus question you just asked. But this is for anybody. Tell us about your sort of dream licensed product crossover. Extra points for total preposterousness.
No, totally different question.
That's where we live.
Thank you.
We live in preposterousness.
Yeah, what do you guys think? Dream licensed crossover.
I want to do a direct sequel to Street Fighter G.I. Joe, but with My Little Pony characters as well.
Nice. Where they would weigh in, they would like...
They're just also in the tournament. Mess. Yeah. I haven't figured out the math yet. Why? But yeah, there's got to be a reason why the horses would fight, right?
They're horses.
Horses naturally fight.
Yeah, well, they're always a race is just a fight. Except
no, I would. I love the format of Street Fighter G.I. Joe so much because it's just fights and it's an opportunity to play wrestling booker and like organize these big tournaments. I would love to do longer and longer ones with more and more characters, whether it's stuff that IDW has or other video games. You guys mentioned Mortal Kombat earlier, but no, I love the format, and it's great, and it's a format that only really works with licensed characters. You couldn't do something like Street Fighter G.I. Joe with 16 brand new characters, because we're very much working off of the Cliff Notes version of these characters' backstories and who they already are. And it does presuppose a little bit of knowledge, but nothing deeper than sort of average pop cultural stuff of, oh, Chun-Li is Chinese and she does a lot of kicks, right? Like, that's enough. That's all you need to know coming in. But yeah, like, this is a format that only would work with pre-established characters, so I would love to keep doing it with the wackier, the better.
Joe, nice. Do you have one? Do you have a favorite licensed character versus that you'd like to do?
Oh, well, I mean, you just had me thinking about some X-Files things we have in the works, and I don't want to...
Oh, you can't say those.
Spill anything, yeah, yeah. But there's, there are a number of science fiction properties that I'd love to cross over with, and we're exploring a bunch of those.
Cool.
Well, I feel like IDW does those every once in a while, and they are kind of crazy, where they take a bunch of their licensed properties, and suddenly it's Mulder and Scully crossing over onto the Starship Enterprise, or...
I don't think we've done that yet.
Fighting the Ghostbusters.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Ghostbusters versus Star Trek?
When they did Star Trek and Green Lanterns. That's a thing.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah, that was great.
That IDW, was crazy.
IDW goes great crossovers, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Pete, what do you think?
I don't know, man.
Licensed property crossover.
Keep trying to push myself to come up with crazier stuff.
In general, but we're talking about this question.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I love Godzilla. I would love to see Godzilla fight something ridiculous.
Yeah, he never does that.
Like Mothra.
No, like a different property.
Oh, I see.
Think that
okay,
would be the
that
fun
would make
part
sense, yeah.
of it. You know, like Voltron or
oh,
something.
Oh, I know, like Godzilla versus the cast of 60 Minutes.
Yes. That would
that
be
would
amazing.
Cool. That would be cool.
I would pay a lot of money
Marley
for that.
Marley Safer is in trouble.
In an interview?
Yeah. No, I mean like a battle royale.
Oh, okay.
Was there a lot of them?
Well, you could do one of each. One issue could be a battle royale, and the other one could be he sits down for an interview with the 60 Minutes.
See if he can handle that barrage of questioning.
He won't.
Great. Cool. Alex, what do you say?
I think I have said my piece.
Okay, cool. Very cool. Very cool.
Cool. Great question. I think we can take one more question from the crowd. You, sir, I saw your hand up. What's your name and what's your question?
My name is Ron. Aubrey, hey, Ron. I got a question for you. And in full disclosure, I back his Patreon at $2 a month.
My man.
So my question is, Street Fighter G.I. Joe is out tomorrow. Can you cut a promo real quick on why people should go and buy it? Or if you don't want to cut a promo because I'm putting you on the spot, what is one thing about comics from maybe when you were growing up that you wish would come to the forefront again? Is it the little boxes in the corners?
Those are two very
page?
Different questions.
I didn't even listen to your second question because I was trying to figure out what voice I was going to do my promo in.
Yeah. I think he's got a promo in him I can base it on his facial.
And it's Dusty Rhodes, Daddy. Listen, Daddy, tomorrow, what's the date tomorrow? What is it? It doesn't matter. Tomorrow in comic stores everywhere. Also, Comixology, online. You got to go. You got to pick up Daddy. You got to listen to me right now, and you got to go to your store. You got to plunk down your dollars, your hard-earned dollars. It's hard times out there for the working man, but you got to take that money. You got to go into your comic shop. You got to plunk it down on the table. You got to get yourself a copy of Street Fighter G.I. Joe number 3. I'm Dusty Rhodes. I approve this message.
Yeah. Nice.
There you go. Joe, it's your turn now.
How's your Dusty Rhodes impression? Is it better than mine?
Very good.
Can't compete with the American dream.
Yeah.
I'll add while you're there, go pick up X-Files 1. It's great as well. So there you go.
Great.
Cool. Great question. You got some free comics. That's it for your audience questions.
Yeah.
Great job, guys. You really did it. Real quick, I think we could do a Week in Geek.
Yeah.
And to the Week in Geek, we talk about some geek culture topics, things happening elsewhere in the world of geek. Real quickly, this is a piece of news. I thought this was pretty fun. So maybe a little bit of a spoiler, probably not actually a real spoiler, but Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is filming. Mm-hmm. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Big spoiler.
And in it... It seems like there's some Easter eggs. Nathan Fillion has a part.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell people what the part is?
He's playing Wonder Man.
Wow. Well, here's the thing. He's not playing Wonder Man.
He's playing Simon Williams.
He's playing Simon Williams because apparently at some point they end up in a movie theater and there's a bunch of posters of Nathan Fillion as Simon Williams in Simon Williams movies.
But that's just as good as having Wonder Man a possibility in the Marvel universe, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you think he'll actually show up as Wonder Man or do you think it's just going to be a bunch of Easter eggs in the movie? What do you guys think?
Easter eggs.
I mean, but I think that's setting something up. Like... Nathan Fillion he's been waiting to have a Marvel role.
Right.
He's been a primed actor in Hollywood to have a good Marvel role.
They're geek catnip.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
The guy from Firefly doing like a C-list like level.
I'm sorry, the guy from Castle.
Doing a D-list.
Oh, it's weird. The crowd didn't go That's crazy me. When you said that, like usual. When you ever see you say Castle, the crowd usually
That's
goes
so
crazy.
Nuts. Yeah.
Because people are such Castle
Bring
fans.
Back Static Cannon!
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody knows what that news is.
They're definitely built into something, though.
For God's sakes, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Well, what do you guys think? Is Nathan Fillion a good Wonder Man?
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
Seem pretty definite.
I'm all right with it. Yeah, no, he does good... cocky, arrogant, but still likable.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
And, I mean, Ant-Man,
I wish he was bigger. He should put on some mass.
He's working out.
Good.
I feel like Ant-Man was initially supposed to be like, this is Marvel's comedy genre movie. It's going to be super funny. And then it ended up not being that. It ended up being just another superhero movie with some comedy in it. Maybe Wonder Man will be the first true, like, comedy.
Deadpool was a comedy.
That was not technically a Marvel movie.
But I think you're totally on the right track. I think you could see a Wonder Man movie filming a superhero movie that's making commentary on superhero movies.
So good.
With Nathan Fillion, that would be great.
So good. I think that's such a great idea.
Do you think a superhero movie can still be a superhero movie, you know, and using those genre tropes and everything, and still be funnier than Guardians of the Galaxy?
Well, I think
hysterical. Like, I can't imagine a superhero movie being funnier than that.
I think Deadpool was one of the best comedies of the year. It was super funny and also like a legit superhero movie. And right. I think because Deadpool wasn't a full-on Marvel movie, I feel like they're like, oh, we can do that.
Yeah,
we
could
definitely do that now. Deadpool's proven it. Wonder Man will be our first version of that.
That'd be great. That's why they push back Inhumans.
Yeah, they're like, it's going to be
get some
the
jokes
Inhumans
in there.
Comedy movie would have been killer. That was super fun. It's a dog.
Yeah, I mean, Black Bolt is basically like one of the Marx Brothers.
Yeah, he's a real Chico. He's the real Chico of the Marvel Chico. Universe. Honk, honk.
Oh, my God.
That was Harpo. Cool. How dare you?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Chico is the least fun one.
Chico talk, too. Harpo doesn't talk.
Yeah, no, I was wrong.
Real
it's
quick,
Harpo.
Before we run out of time, Game of Thrones was back this week.
Right. I know. Is that like off our table? We can talk about
that. Yeah, it's definitely off of our table.
Why? Well, why?
We talk Game of Thrones. We can't talk about like comic book TV shows
what
that are
mean?
On right now.
You had
like
your
what?
Time for talking about Lucifer?
Yeah, I did not have any time to talk about Lucifer.
You had your moment.
You did that all pitch. You did that pitch set.
Yeah, you
no,
did all
I
pitch
did not
set.
Pitch. You guys spent the whole time doing fucking bits.
Well, we don't really.
Why don't you sell us on it in the voice of Dusty Rhodes?
Me?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Sell them on Game of Thrones.
The game of the
no, that's not what he's asking. Yeah. He's asking you like to sell us on Lucifer and the voice of Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what he was
and
saying.
Lucifer's perfect. You get to the lisp a lot. Lucifer.
Lucifer. Lucifer.
That's pretty good. I think that pretty much covers Game of Thrones.
I would say so.
How did you feel? You have been jonesing for this.
I have been jonesing for it. I felt all right.
Okay. I was so not happy.
No, I was fine with it. It reminded me that almost every episode of Game of Thrones is, oh yeah, that was an episode of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's like watching the news.
It is. What's it's happening? Like, and now we turn to Arya the Blind Report.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this episode, like in past season premieres, it's been like, here are the two main stories and we'll see some other people. This one was like, no, legit, we're running down the news. Oh my God, we got to squeeze in a little bit with this other character. Yeah. We got some great scenes. I feel like the end of the episode, I love that. That was very cool.
Sure. Yeah, it was
funny. Fun. Let's see where that goes. I feel like that opens a door for a more magical world, which I think is the point of this season.
More magical?
I mean that in a
way. It's just funny that you're like, that old woman going to sleep opens the door for a more magical world.
I think we all have a lot to look forward to in old age. No, I mean,
it's my sunset years.
I hope to retire in much the same way that Melisandre does.
Sure.
By just being nude in amongst my people.
You can be nude right now.
What?
If you want to.
You clearly didn't watch the show.
No, I did not watch the show. I hate that show.
I think, I mean, I don't want to spoil too much for people that are behind on it, but I think that last move is like, oh, shit, there's a whole real magic.
There's a whole old world
out
there.
You know what? Fuck off. It's cool. It's a good episode.
Oh, it's great. Does it bother you when
real quick, we're running out of
something?
Time. Was there a new Arrow this week?
Nah, no.
That's all
wasn't.
The time we have. All right, we're going to move to our next section, which is trivia. For that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
Guys, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. Who would like $25? Simple raising of the hand. Oh, man, there was two hands up at the same time. All right, yeah, because so you won the comics, so why don't you come on down, sir?
Come
on down.
All right.
Hey, what's up, man? We're going to need a microphone. What is your name, sir?
Hey, Jason.
Jason, audience. Audience, Jason.
Hey, audience.
All right.
All right. So today's trivia is...
Oh, yeah, here, come stand over here. It's basic stagecraft. You want to know.
All right. Oh,
okay.
Today's trivia is on Street Fighter versus G.I. Joe and X-Files comics.
True.
So as long as you've read every single one, you'll be fine.
All right.
So please listen to the question, then listen to all three possible answers. Go 3 for 3. And $25 is yours. Okay, question number one. In Street Fighter versus G.I. Joe, where does the battle take place? Is it A, a secret island in international waters, or is it B, a secret bison lair inside a volcano, or is it C, Victoria's Secrets? So it's either A, which I recommend picking, or it's B.
A.
A is correct!
All right.
Great. Here we go. The title for X-Files number one is blank. Is it A, first-person shooter, B, active shooter, or is it C, Shawshank Redemption? So it's either A, which is incorrect, or it's B.
B.
That's correct. X-Files number one, active shooter.
Yeah.
All right. Last one. the amazing artist on Street Fighter versus G.I. Joe, you might remember from, is it A, Hackslash, B, Backslash, or is it C, Bangers and Mash? So it's either A, which is the only one that's an actual comic book that was amazing, or it's none of the other ones.
A.
$25, Jason! Congratulations, sir.
That's great.
Amazing. I love how you didn't even let him answer the question. You just started handing
it. Yeah, you just handed it. That's great.
I got to say, Pete, if we were to chart your trivias from the beginning of the show to now,
yep,
they've gotten pretty crazy. What a journey we've all been on with
Journey to the past, Anastasia. Speaking of journeys, I'm going to journey out to the comic book store tomorrow.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah.
To check out all the new comics. Specifically, I'm going to be heading to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show.
Yep.
Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, a lot of great stuff.
A lot of great stuff.
I mean, obviously, we're looking forward to their stuff coming out. Mm-hmm. But I got to say, Four Eyes, Heart of Fire number 4 is coming out. Cannot wait. Yeah, yeah. People. Woohoo!
Got some fans in the back.
Say, Dragon Fighting in the Depression era.
Yep. Yeah.
There you go.
Quick. I'm looking forward to Low number 13, comic about post-apocalyptic comic about trying to find another place to live after the world is ruined.
After
very
we,
good, Rick Remender.
We ruined it.
Yeah, okay.
We're going to go somewhere else.
We specifically didn't.
Yeah, but we did.
You think you and I are going to be revealed as the villains?
Yeah.
Wow. Huh. We are
that's
bad
pretty
people.
Surprising. I was told before the show that I have a weird thing about sex books, specifically because I like Sex Criminals, which is a really good book that happens to be about sex.
Just happens to be about sex.
Anyway, there's a new issue of Sex Criminals coming out tomorrow. Great book. Definitely check it out.
way to make your pick weird.
Yeah, there you go.
Creepy. No problem. It's a great book, though. If you aren't reading it, it's hilarious and unique every issue.
It's hilarious and it's hot. I just love it. It's just
because it's a book about people that can freeze time with their genitals doesn't mean it's only about sex.
That's true. I've been in Artist Alley and watched you buy some real sex comics.
All right.
Once.
True.
One time.
That's, you know what?
One time.
That's
I've been
enough.
Too embarrassed
that's
to do
enough.
It after that.
That's enough.
All I'm saying is it was one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. But
that made me very happy.
We'll get into that
we'll
story.
We'll get that story next time.
There we go. Tune in next time to find out that story. Joe, what are you looking forward to?
IDW is bringing back Micronauts.
Oh,
writing, so I'm going to check that out tomorrow. And the first Black Magic trade, Greg Rucka's series.
Oh,
great.
Yeah, it's great.
Great book.
Now, besides X-Files number 1, you have a couple of other things you're working on. Do you want to plug those?
Yeah, I currently write an Image comic series called Snowfall. It's a sci-fi, environmentally themed story set in a post-climate crash world.
Yeah, I'll mention the first issue is out so far. It was the first two
issues. The third one just came out.
Yeah.
But it's, I would say, sort of a pseudo-spiritual sequel to Great Pacific, which was another sci-fi eco-thriller type book.
Yeah, and Martin Marazzo is my collaborator on that
which
as well.
Which was excellent. So. If you've never picked that up, pick it up and trade.
Thank you. Yeah, that's our niche, I guess. We do environmental dystopias.
Really a very wide niche.
So there's that, and then we just announced a new series I'm going to be putting out through Image Comics with Megan Hutchison at the end of the year called Rockstars.
She's phenomenal. She's really,
she
really
great.
Yeah.
She did that Will-O-The-Wisp book?
Yeah, Will-O-The-Wisp, an archaeographic novel.
Yeah, it was great.
And she did the WonderCon variant cover for Archer and Armstrong. That was really great, and I know they sold a ton of copies of it, WonderCon at Valiant. And Rockstars, that comes out in December.
And what's that book about?
It's I've been pitching it to people just as Almost Famous meets Supernatural.
Awesome.
It's a rock and roll thriller. It's about two rock and roll investigators that get to the bottom of the truth behind all the urban legends and secrets and, you know, backward messages and things like that.
Yeah.
And
do they ever get terrorized by a tiny dancer?
Perhaps.
Nice.
All right, I'll have to pick it up then.
Good.
Aubrey, what are you looking forward to?
Everybody's still reading Saga, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
We talk about it every week. That's why, you know.
Oh, okay. Well, this is sort of invalid to what I was going to say. But too often when series go on for a really long time, everybody just kind of keeps buying them, but nobody talks about them, and people forget how great things like Saga, the fact that we have had 3 years of this sustained, epic, ongoing, serialized story without crazy events or different artists or weird disruptions or, you know, like short con chasing decisions. And it's instead just some amazingly talented storytellers telling a story with a shocking degree of restraint. That's what impresses me most about
the restraint.
I mean, the restraint. It's true. And it's a crazy book where crazy things happen.
Right.
But it is a book that takes a deliberate pace because Fiona Staples, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fiona Staples and Brian K. Vaughan have so much confidence, rightfully so, in their abilities as storytellers.
Well, and I will say, Brian K. Vaughan has been tweeting about this a little bit, that apparently tomorrow's issue is totally fucked up. So I am terrified about what's going to happen because, to your point, over the past couple of years, you have grown to care about those characters so much that losing anybody, not just the main characters, but the side characters,
like a body blow,
gutting every time it happens. And plug your stuff beyond Street Fighter G.I. Joe.
Street Fighter G.I. Joe is coming out monthly. I also do it's not comics, but it's like comics. It's a serialized sword and sorcery podcast called Scald. And I have a good pitch for mine too. It's like Conan, but it's told by the Ultimate Warrior. So it's like 30 to 40 minutes, like in one take of me shouting like a more cocky and like sword and sorcery tale at
you. Whoa, that's dense.
It's bonkers. It comes out every Tuesday. There's 58 episodes. It's been going on for over a year now, up right now. A new episode every single Tuesday. It's bonkers. Also, I wish I could talk about it, but I was just at the IDW Writers Summit last week, and I've got big stuff coming down the pike from them. Have me back sometime when I can talk about it.
Definitely.
There you go.
Awesome.
Bring another promo.
A couple of things before we go. This show is actually free to see and free to listen to, but it does cost us a little bit of money to put on. So if you would like to donate, totally up to you, but there is a hat over here physically in the theater, or if you're listening at home, there's our virtual hat, GoFundMe.com/comicbookclublive. We do appreciate anything you do donate. Pete, anything you want to plug?
Yes, friend us on Facebook so you get to know about all the amazing guests we have on the show.
Follow us on Twitter at comicbooklive. I also do a UCB show, a comedy show, and that's a podcast called Gentrify. Check that out.
Cool. And check us out at comicbookclublive.com, nerdist.com for the podcast and more. A couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank our fabulous interns, Iman Bell, Tom Radar, Craig Fletcher, David McKay, and Riley Trahan. We want to thank Joe for being on the show.
Yeah!
Aubrey! All-Star Boothman. Most of all, we want to thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 7:30 in New York, totally free. Please tell your friends, good night.
Good night, guys. Thank you.
Thanks for coming out.